Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today we have on DTE JD 1997. Of course, that's not his real name, just a pseudonym. He prefers to be private. But DTEJD, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Eric. It's wonderful to be back. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
No, absolutely. It's always interesting with all the weird kinds of investments that you look at. So it's right up my alley, and I hope it's right up the listeners' alleys too. So far your episodes get lots of downloads. So we'll hope to
good,
keep it
good.
That way. Yeah,
wonderful.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
To hear that.
Yeah, you know, I'm hey, me too. So I wanted to talk about real estate investing in Detroit. You know a thing or two about that.
I know a little bit about it, and I'm desperately trying to learn more. I was born and raised in Detroit up until through high school. And after high school, I went out to college, and then I went on to graduate school. And then, you know, I've lived in Ohio and Texas and all sorts of different places, and it's quite a long and complicated story, but then I'll skip almost all of that. But I came back to Detroit about 4 years ago because obviously I have a lot of family here and I have some friends here and I still have some contacts. So I came back to Detroit, approximately 4 years ago. And at the time, I was working as an attorney, and that's a whole other story there, but I've always had a business streak in me, and I've always, you know, been an investor and liked to do different things. And throughout my life, I'm in my 40s, but I started buying commercial real estate back in my 20s. And to be perfectly frank, real estate is at least for me, has been a difficult thing. But every time I do it, hopefully, I think I get a little bit better. I've learned a lot of hard lessons. But I've come back to Detroit, and Detroit is very interesting, a very interesting place to be, I think, for a lot of different reasons. But one of those reasons is that it's such an unusual, maybe even crazy business and real estate environment. I'm sure, you know, most of your listeners have heard, you know, everybody's heard the crazy stories of Detroit. Unfortunately, a lot of those are true or are close to being true. You know, you can buy houses here. In certain parts, certain areas of the city, you can buy a house for a nominal amount of money, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000. And up until recently, you even had chunks of the city, you know, where real estate values have been, you know, zero or close to zero. But anyway, to get on with the story. At night, I would go walking, you know, because I had a desk job during the day, and I was looking to lease some office space, and I saw a building maybe a half mile from where I lived that was for sale by owner. I thought, oh, this might be nice. This would be a good place, you know, for me to kind of set up my business operation. Maybe they'd rent it to me. So I called them up and talked with them, and they were not at all interested in renting, not at all. They wanted to sell it and said, oh, well, I'm not really that interested in buying. And they said, well, you know, it's only $40,000 and you get both buildings. I'm like, wait a minute, I thought it's only one building. They're like, no, you get the building next door. So anyway, to make a very long story short, I bought two commercial office buildings, and they're small buildings. They're about 1,200 and 1,400 square feet for just over $26,000. You know, which comes out to about $11 to $12 per square foot. And you know, the bill. You know, some people may be thinking, "Aha! Well, surely you know there's a problem with them. You know, maybe there's not a floor, maybe there's not a roof." But sure enough, they have all four walls, a roof, and a floor, and air conditioning, and plumbing, and electrical system, and you know, lighting, and the buildings are just, and they're not even in the city of Detroit. So the crazy thing is you can buy real estate here in Detroit and even around Detroit for less, I mean, well less than what you could rent it for on the coasts, sometimes, or even in Texas. You know, when you can buy real, you know, and I asked them, you know, is there a tax lien? Is there ancient Indian burial ground underneath it? Are you storing, you know, radioactive waste? You know, it's no. And what it was is the family was involved in accounting, and they had owned the buildings for, you know, a little over 40 years. And the father had passed away, and the widow just simply wanted to sell, and she wanted to move down to Florida and just be done with it. So one of the things that's going on in and around Detroit is there's a large generational shift. And obviously that's going on in other places too. But in some communities and neighborhoods in Detroit, it's quite pronounced. The demographics are turning over. People are getting older, and they want to sell. So you'll have these market inefficiencies because the building next door to these buildings was listed for sale at, you know, $185,000. You know, and I asked, you know, the sellers of the building, I said, well, how come, you know, the neighbor is asking so much more than what you're asking? They said, well, you know, the building's a little bit bigger, it's a little bit nicer, but what it boils down to is one person is very serious about selling, and the other person, not so much. So what I've come to find out, Eric, is that there's a tremendous amount of inefficiency if you know where to look, if you're patient, you know, and you're willing to go into, you know, not prime areas, but certainly not, you know, the area I live in is not a prime area or where I work in.
Right.
But it's also not a war zone. You know, it's just a solid middle-class working community. You know, and that, you know, for what I'm doing, that's just fine. Where else in the country can you buy real estate, you know, so cheaply?
And you're saying that these opportunities still exist in Detroit.
They exist in Detroit, in and around the greater Detroit area, yes. Because so, one of...
Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the problems that was there with the buildings was the tax assessment. And that's actually a very, very serious problem here in the Detroit area. When I bought the buildings, the yearly taxes were close to $7,000 a year. So the buildings were not properly assessed, and I fought for a couple years, and I think the buildings are still taxed more than what they should be, but I did get managed finally to get the tax bill reduced by about 60%. So one of the problems you will have, and I found this out, is that even if you do get a tremendous bargain on a property, you're going to have to deal with the taxes. And that should be a relatively simple thing, but unfortunately, you know, it's not always as simple as what it should be. But it can be worked with, and it can be overcome to some degree. But
what's it like in the economic, what do they call them, like economic development zones or something like that they have in Detroit?
Yes. So yes, I've been looking into.
So how does that work with the taxes?
Well, the economic development zones are designated, I guess, I think by the state governor. And in, here in the Detroit area, it's kind of crazy because it's a crazy patchwork or quilt. One area that you would think for sure should be an economic development zone is not. And then some areas that are relatively prosperous are. But, and I don't think all the final regulations are set, but what it boils down to is that if you have a large capital gain, let's say an Apple stock that you bought back in 1997, you can sell that Apple stock, take the proceeds, and buy a property or a business in one of these certified economic development zones, and then your capital gain will be deferred. Now, you've been able to do this with what are called 1031 exchanges, but that had to be investment property for investment property. One of the big things with these economic development zones is that you can take capital gains from other asset classes, such as, you know, stocks and bonds, or businesses, or gold bullion, or whatever. You know, whatever you have a large capital gain in, you can take that money and then invest it in these zones tax-free, or tax-deferred, excuse me. Now, also, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I've heard that if you have an operating business, like let's say you're building carburetors or, you know, steering mechanisms for cars or whatever it is that you're doing, you will have very favored tax status on that. So you could get a double whammy if you bought the property and had an operating business. And there are also there are certain stipulations, like liquor stores are not eligible, tanning salons are not eligible. It has to be certain things, and I don't fully know that. And I am not in an economic opportunity zone, but there are some that are a mile or two away from me. And like I said, the interesting thing is certain neighborhoods that were, some of the neighborhoods that really need it are not designated zones, and other ones are, which makes me think that perhaps maybe there are developers or, you know, large owners in those areas that know people to know, you know, and they got certain favorable designation for the areas. So, but there are a lot of these economic development zones in and around Detroit. And Detroit has had a very difficult time of things, well, probably almost as long as I've been alive. And in the last few years, you know, the auto industry has done, you know, relatively well. And believe it or not, there's tremendous development going on in the downtown area and also in the new center area and where Wayne State is, which is a large local school. And you have some of these areas that were just, I didn't think would ever come back to life. And sure enough, people have started moving in, they're gentrifying. You have lots of bars and restaurants and specialty stores coming in. And then also you're starting to have larger businesses. For example, Ford Motor Company is spending, I think it's either $700 or $900 million on the old train station that's been abandoned for 40 years. And that is going to act as a catalyst for development in that little area. So you're starting to have, you know, you've got the government is more, or the city government, excuse me, is more amenable to having businesses and investment come in. You know, for a long period of time, Detroit was notorious for being difficult to work with, difficult to deal with, difficult to operate a business in. And that has it's not changed 100%, but it's certainly going in the right direction. So, you know, you finally have a business-friendly government, and you're starting to have development, you know, from little people like me, you know, from medium-sized companies, and even large companies like Ford are coming back into the city. Now, I don't think Detroit will ever be as great as what it was in its heyday, but it's certainly better than what it was. And you've got all these opportunities, if you know where to look, where stuff is still just silly cheap, like what I bought. And one of the very interesting things that I learned, and kind of, you know, the light went off in my head, is that when I was preparing to contest my taxes, what I did was file a Freedom of Information request to get all the commercial property transactions for the past 2 years in my little city. And I went through, line by line by line, every single commercial property transaction. You know, and most of them were, you know, kind of, sort of about what you would expect, but not all of them. You know, I think I got a really, really good deal, but guess what? There are a whole bunch of other people that got deals just as good as I did, or even better yet. And there are some people here, so, you know, if they've got the capital, if they've got the patience, if they know where to look, boy, there's some people that are really, really, really making some good money and really doing well, because they get these properties just so incredibly cheap.
How do you do this if you don't live in Detroit?
You mean if you're out of state?
Right, because, you know, most of our listeners are not going to be living in the state.
Right. Well, that's a good question.
Can you?
You can. You know, I've heard of people buy, you know, from Israel and Japan and, you know, just all
right. So what are those guys doing, right? If you're living in Japan and you're investing in Detroit, how are you managing these properties? How are you looking after them? How do you know who to talk to for certain tax benefits? Like, what would be the process for all that?
Well, if I were going to do it, what I would do is partner with somebody that, you know, is a local operator that actually is doing it.
Like a property management company you're talking about?
Well, maybe. You've got to be careful with property management companies because managing properties in Detroit can be a very difficult thing. I'm talking about primarily residential housing, and I think a lot of people get burned with that. You know, people will hear stories of, you know, oh, you can get a $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 house, you know, and you rent it for $600, $700, $800 a month, which absolutely certainly can be done, and people are doing it. But I really, really, really would be skeptical that somebody could own it from a distance and simply have a property management company.
No, I didn't mean residential. I meant if you're owning like an office property here.
Okay. Yes, for commercial property, yes. I think that would be,
We know the cops are back in business in Detroit. wasn't there a time where like the ambulances weren't even like working or something? Like nothing was getting funded?
I don't think it ever quite got to the point where nothing was working, but
you used to hear stories. Like, this is like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, where you would hear stories of like this town in Michigan, there's no ambulance service going on. Like,
I swear,
I remember articles like that. Am I just fucking making this shit up, or that I feel like there's something of that, right?
It may have been with Flint or perhaps some of the cities.
They were all dying of, like, water poisoning or some shit.
A very unfortunate. That's a crazy thing happened up in Flint where when the city went bankrupt, they were buying water from Detroit. And believe it or not, Detroit Metro Area, Detroit Water Authority, has some of the very best water in the world because we're at the nexus of several different Great Lakes. We have Lake St. Clair, Lake Erie, Lake Huron. And to make a very long story short, Flint stopped getting water from the Detroit Water Authority, which pulls it out of the Great Lakes. So they started pulling it out of the Flint River. You know, nothing could possibly go wrong with that.
And then didn't the mayor of Flint start diverting the water crisis money to, like, their own PAC or something like that? Wasn't that, like, a thing, too?
That could be. I can't say for sure, but one of the crazy things was that in order to save, like, $3,000 a month, they stopped buying a certain chemical that they would put in there to, I don't know the full chemistry of it, but what it would do is it would, I think, lower the pH balance of the water so that it would go easier on the pipes. So for not spending the $3,000, the water became slightly more acidic and ate away some of the pipe. And, you know, these may not be the exact technical terms, but the water was rougher than what it was, you know, coming out of the Flint River. It was harsher water than what was coming out of the Great Lakes. So to save a few thousand dollars a month, they start pumping through different water, and it ate through some of the linings of the pipes that were laid down in the 19-teens, 1920s, and now the lead starts leaching out of the pipes and into the water supply. So tragically, you know, you've got lead poisoning.
Is that so? That's how it happened.
Yes.
Jesus.
That's my understanding. And yeah, and had Flint not gone bankrupt, had Flint not tried to save literally like $3,000 a month, this never would have happened. But it did, and now they've spent I don't know how many tons or hundreds of millions of dollars reworking the plumbing and the water system up in Flint. And, you know, not to sound like a jackass or callous, but I really have to question the wisdom of spending all that money to rehab the water system in Flint, because at the end of the day, what do you have? You still have, you know, Flint is Flint. And really, if I were living in Flint, I probably would be looking to get out, because as difficult as things are in Detroit, Flint is way worse.
Do you think there's a real estate opportunity in Flint, or is that?
There may be, but I am not aware of it.
Okay.
And Flint is just like, just crazy town. So what I would have done, you know, if I were king of the world,
yeah,
instead of spending that money on the Flint water supply, I'd have said to the people that were negative, and not everybody in Flint had poisoned water, but a good chunk of them, say, okay, instead of spending the money fixing the pipes, why don't I give you money and help you relocate to Houston, or to Las Vegas, or to Los Angeles, or Miami.
Yeah, but the problem with that is no politician wants to spend money to take away their tax base, right?
Right. Right. The population. But in the end result, but the end result would have been so much better.
But there's no incentive to do that.
Well,
like, I'm just going to pay money. I'm going to spend money to not get future tax revenue. Huh.
Yeah, well, but when you look at the amount of money that was being spent.
No, I get what you're saying, but you know just as well as I do that incentives matter. When incentives are misaligned with common sense, it's the incentives that went out usually.
Unfortunately. But, you know, Flint was the original headquarters of General Motors way back when. And Flint used to be, I'm talking like in the 30s and 40s and 50s, an incredible industrial city. And Flint has been hit hard, as it may be to imagine, as bad as Detroit got it, Flint got it even worse.
Yeah. I mean, I was in Detroit. It was, I think, it was a few years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I was actually looking at real estate. There was some interesting situations, though. I remember this one. So this was there was a few buildings I looked at. I remember one particular building. It was a residential, like apartment complex, and I think it was something like the building was like $1 million, and it was yielding rental income of like $100,000 a year. And if you were to just build that building on your own, it would have cost you like $3 or $4 million.
Oh yeah, yeah. And there's a project that I think I'm going to be working on next that is arguably one of the nicer buildings in my little city. You know, the assessed tax value is $750,000.
Yeah.
And the building is relatively new. It was either built in 1999 or 2000. And the owners are asking. They're asking $300,000. And it's a beautiful brick building set back from the road on an acre and a half wooded lot with a huge parking, you know. And, they probably spent, you know, $650,000, $750,000, maybe $800,000 building it.
Yeah.
But the market conditions... you can buy property for so much less than the replacement cost.
So would you say apartment, if you're not living in Detroit, though, even an apartment complex is going to be difficult? I mean, or would you not rely on a property manager for that?
I probably, to be perfectly frank with you, would stay away from residential because, you have a different set of laws for residential people. You have to go through an eviction and, you have different regulations. And so
are those laws pretty, do they favor tenants pretty heavily with that?
Generally, yes. Not 100%.
So if you were to pick a real estate asset class or classes that you would start, generally combing through, commercial. Okay.
Commercial. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, if you're, and that's doubly so for absentee or owners outside of the metro area.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And then, then what would you do in terms of, finding a reputable property manager for those locations?
Well, what I would do is, number one, I would look to see how long they've been in business. You have a lot of companies now coming in that... they have little to no experience. There's hot money flowing into certain neighborhoods and certain areas around here. Heck, they're even getting together tour buses and taking investors on tours. And I'm thinking, that's kind of an interesting idea, but you're not going to get the real deals from being on a tour.
No, I cringe you even saying that.
Yeah, so number one, I would look to see how long they've been in business.
But you know what that reminds me of? When you said people touring to look at investment properties, it reminds me of what are those, like, vacation rental companies? You know what I'm talking about? Oh, my God. Yeah, timeshares. Or even, like, those guys that do, like, stock trading seminars and shit like that.
Oh, fuck. Yes.
I saw a commercial. This was like a week or two ago, and I've seen it twice now. And every time I see it, I'm thinking to myself, how can this be how could someone air this on TV? So it's a woman and she has some trading strategy. And she says, if you've been following my trading strategy, I've done triple digit annualized returns for like the last X amount of years. So you can do that too. Which, of course, if you do the numbers on, like $100 compounded at like 200% a year, you become a billionaire pretty quickly. And so if that woman's really doing 200% a year, she's not giving away free books and probably selling some webinar to upcharge you. She's a multi-billionaire not doing TV commercials.
Exactly. And the other thing too is, I get these,
That was on CN. That's a commercial on the CNBC.
Which absolutely. That's we've got commercials here in Detroit. You know, get rich quick in real estate using leverage, and anybody can do it. And
turnkey system, right? They always say turnkey.
Absolutely, and there are a couple of.
Yeah, guys, if anyone tells you to sell, they're going to sell you something, and it's easy and turnkey, run the fuck the other way.
Yes, exactly. And
I love, have you ever gone to like bizbuysell.com?
I think I've heard
that. It's like if you're buying a small private business. I don't care to give away the website. I'm not going to buy a local business in Alabama, so I don't really care about the competition. But sometimes you see like a restaurant on there and it's like turnkey restaurant, turnkey bar. Like, what the fuck kind of restaurant is turnkey? Like,
yeah, there are some kind of sort of like that, but probably not that you're going to find on these different websites. And
yeah.
The other thing is I get hundreds of emails per day, and a certain percentage of them are different brokers or promoters saying, hey, I've got property on, east side of Detroit for $10,000.
When I was in Detroit, there was a few people I spent a few days out there, and, each day I would spend time with, a different, local company to kind of show me around and show me different buildings that were for sale. There was one, I'm not going to say the name, but there was one company. What I really liked about them is that they often invested in the buildings alongside.
There you go.
Their interests were aligned. And they actually said, we're going to look like we're not going to rush a deal. Like sometimes, it takes a year and a half to find something, but when we find it, we hope you make a lot of money, so you'll keep using us.
Yeah.
And it was just, working with this guy. Compared to some of these other guys, he was so knowledgeable. He had contacts on the ground. I think you really need to find someone like that if you want to invest in Detroit, or someone like you even.
Perhaps, yes. But
sorry, I don't need to get all these emails now.
one of the crazy things.
There's a reason he keeps his personal information private on here. See, I'm on to you now.
Yeah. No, I get a lot of emails. You're on to me. But if somebody is sending you an email saying, hey, I've got a house or a property or whatever, and you're going to make 30% on it.
But
wait a minute.
Spam.
Why are you selling?
why aren't you investing in that yourself?
Exactly. If I have something making 30%, it's not going to be up for sale.
I found this amazing thinly traded company, and if I buy some shares, it might move the stock price. I don't own any of it. I'm going to tell you what it is. That's pretty much what it is like.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck would do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And when you look at the numbers, kind of, sort of, they work, but... I'm going to suggest that, on these crazy, 20, 30%, 18% houses or buildings or whatever, that, okay, maybe those numbers are going to work for 3 months or 6 months or maybe even a year.
Go ahead. I just want to ask you, though, what's like a minimum cap rate you would look for in Detroit?
In Detroit,
or Detroit area.
Well, if you come out of Detroit proper, say into like St. Clair Shores or East Point, or Warren or something, one of the nearby cities, I would be looking for about 15%.
Okay.
That's
a cap rate. You're talking like unlevered, 15%.
Approximately.
Okay.
Now that gets a little bit more complicated because you could say like this one property that I'm looking at now, well, wait a minute, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to change its use a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make some changes and, you know, I'm going to use some of the space in there for one of my projects or one of my businesses.
Right. I did see, too, and it wasn't so much commercial, but so that apartment building that I was talking to you about, I wonder if commercial also has this. One of the things the guy who was showing us the building was saying was one of the reasons he thought it was a good investment was that the rent was significantly below the market price. And, you know, he was just saying, you know, we were discussing on the phone, he's like, you know, you could easily raise the rent even still below market price, but to here, and you'd still have, it was full occupancy too. It was amazing.
Yes. Yes. And the crazy thing is that for such a long period of time, you know, rents have been going down in Detroit, but now, you know, now they're going up. And if you're in the right spot, and believe me, it's tricky, because one of the crazy things about Detroit, like when I was growing up, you know, I lived in a few different spots, but one of the areas I lived in, and if anybody knows Detroit, they'll know, you know, I lived in Indian Village, a beautiful, beautiful, incredible area. But quite literally, if you went two blocks the wrong way, boy, you better be good with your fists. It was a very rough, very, very rough environment. And that's one of the unusual things about Detroit, is that you could have a relatively well-to-do, relatively nice area, and literally go two, or sometimes not even two blocks. Sometimes you literally cross the street.
Yeah.
And the neighborhood changes.
Oh, it was weird.
So much.
Yeah, you know, it was weird. The other place where I've seen that was in Cleveland, Ohio, where I remember, as I drive through Cleveland a lot, and there'd be one block and there'd be mansions. Two blocks down, it's like terrifying to even want to get out of your car.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Two blocks away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've started doing a little bit of business in Cleveland, and I don't get it. You know, all the jokes about Cleveland. Cleveland appears, or at least the areas I've been going to, as a relatively prosperous, you know, pretty decent city.
Well, the downtown's pretty nice. Like, it's a nice little business district. And
Yeah, compared to, you know, there's some...
But hey, even in Detroit, I was actually pretty impressed. The food scene's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You know what it reminded me of a little bit? Have you been in New York City much?
Not lately, but I have been to New York City.
It almost reminded me of like a West Village-y vibe to it. Like a little crunchy, little hipster.
Yeah.
You go.
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, you know what? More like, I would say even more like Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Because you get those like warehouse, like those like old warehouses that get converted into a restaurant. Very industrial looking, and like the preservation of the industrial look was like a big thing there. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, Detroit has got some incredible architecture. There's
got the river too, the water with the architecture. Yeah. I was going to say the architecture too, and the
We've got incredible Art Deco. I think Detroit is the number three spot in the country for Art Deco.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, the Fisher Building. I don't know if you've been in there, but that is just unrivaled. You know, back when the Fisher Brothers built it in 1928-29, just before the great crash, no expense was spared. And I mean, no expense. They've got, you know, they've got marble from every continent on Earth. They had, you know, just incredible architects. It's incredible.
Well, even the hotel that I stayed in, I don't remember the name of it, but the thing was weird about it. It was right on the water, right?
Okay.
Beautiful building. But there was barely any people inside, and it was like $50 a night, something really cheap. And, it was weird because, you know, you would expect like such a night. And it was an old building,
Probably along Jefferson, probably very close to downtown, right?
It was close to downtown, yeah, and it was right on the water.
Yeah, that's another crazy thing about Detroit is that if this is the correct area I grew up, I think like 2 miles from there, is that there is a lot of abandoned property on the riverfront.
When we would drive to the hotel, it was all these abandoned properties right on the water.
Mm-hmm.
You got to imagine that as, you know, back then they were building a new stadium in that area, and there was new restaurants open up. You got to imagine that at some point, some of that stuff's got to come back just because you have the geography for it to be a nice city.
Yeah, and in one respect, you're right, but let me throw back at you another figure here.
Okay.
Detroit has got an incredible, crazy history. And one of the things that I've learned is that what you will read, the history that's recorded in the books, is not quite always what is the truth or what had happened. Because believe it or not, at certain points in its history, Detroit had incredible housing shortages.
Huh.
This would have been like in the 19-teens, 1920s, and perhaps in the 1940s. So at its peak, Detroit had a population of, say, 2.1, 2.3 million on the books, which was true, absolutely. But in reality, the population was even higher than that, because there are a lot of itinerant workers, people that would stay in boarding houses, rooming houses. You know, we're talking, of course, 70, 80 years ago. So even though the population on the books may have been 2.1, 2.3 million, in reality, it may have been 2.8 or maybe even 3 million.
That's interesting.
Yeah. In terms of the geographic size, Detroit is also one of the largest cities in the country. I think I read somewhere that San Francisco, Manhattan, and Boston can all fit within the city limits of Detroit. So yes, you're right, but you would think that along the river that would be prime A++ development.
That's what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah, and certain parts are, and you would think that, but you've got a problem now that, let's say, you know, maybe I'm right about Detroit. Well, I'm pretty sure that I am, that it, you know, the actual population was even higher than is recorded. Now, in the year 2019, the population of Detroit is 700,000 or 680 from, you know, so quite literally, a million and a half to 2 million people have left the city. So you've got, in some areas, huge areas that are fallow and are going back to nature. This is especially the case on the Lower East Side.
Don't you think, though, the fact that the city went bankrupt, wouldn't you say that was a good thing? I mean, it's made the city more fiscally responsible and more, you know, there's more economic incentives now to develop out there.
Well, perhaps, but I hate to see, you know, any city or any person or any company go bankrupt. But I think sometimes
it's for the good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sometimes it has to be done, and it had to be done.
I mean, if you just imagine some of these crappy cities that never actually go bankrupt, and they always kind of figure out a way to just kind of keep going. That's not really a good outcome.
No, absolutely, you're right, but speaking of bankruptcy of cities, there are going to be a whole lot more bankruptcies coming up, I guarantee you, because, for example, the city that I live and work in, their pension and post-retirement obligation. The craziest thing, I only learned that there's a little free newspaper that comes out once a week,
mm-hmm.
and there's a certain restaurant that my dad loves to eat at. You know, so I clip out the coupons for them. So I'm clipping out the coupons, and I see this story. It says, you know, local city's pension is underfunded by $75 million. I'm like, what?
So you could almost see that as, It might have been Buffett talking about this. It was someone talking about this, that if you were looking at doing business in those cities, you'd have to look at an underfunded pension almost like an up-and-coming tax that's going to happen, because they're going to need to get the money from somewhere, and it's going to come from the people.
Well, is it, or are the retirees going to have to take a cut, or some combination of
Combination of both? But yeah. You know, think about if we need to raise money to fund this pension as part of this negotiation, so we're going to increase the business tax, or we're going to increase the the local income tax, or whatever tax mechanisms that they use to at least close some of that gap. But it's not going to be pretty.
It's going to be difficult. And yeah. I spoke with my city manager, just kind of like the mayor, for 45 minutes after I saw this little story, because I was shocked, and that works out to about, I think it's $2,600 for every man, woman, and child in the city in which I live. Yep. But, Eric, the crazy thing is, and I'll give it to the city manager, he goes, yeah, we've got a problem, and yeah, we're probably going to go bankrupt at some point, but there are lots of other cities, even more prosperous, well, even some of the Grosse Pointes have got problems with this, that their pensions and post-retire, and it's also, it's not just the pensions, it's the retirees' health care, because number one, they don't have enough assets in the funds to begin with. Number two, the actual rate of returns have differed materially from the projected rates of returns, not for a year or two, but, for a decade or more. And then three, you've got inflation with, drug prices and medical procedures and so on and so forth. That, the end result is the retirees, they're going to take a hit. They're going to have to
take a hit. Well, look, in Detroit, the retirees took a hit.
Yeah, and I have family members that are retirees from the city of Detroit. And yes, they did take a hit, but they lost.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. It said Detroit ultimately shed $7 billion in debt, was able to restructure another $3 billion to put about $1.7 billion in improvements. And then in the end, the bankruptcy proceedings eliminated $7.8 billion in payments to retired workers, and the city got off the hook for $4.3 billion in unfunded health care obligations and future costs.
Yes. So the retirees, they primarily took a hit. And they did take a hit in their pensions, but that was relatively small. That was primarily more in the health care, in that they lost, some of their benefits, and now their co-pays are significantly higher. They have a higher yearly deductible and so on and so forth. But all things considered, the Detroit retirees did not do, they took a hit, but, oh my, it could have been worse.
Right.
I've read stories.
That's funny. That article I was reading, I said it could have been worse. Word for word.
Yeah. Now, here's who really got shafted was, let's say you're a little computer vendor selling, adding machines or computers or whatever to City Hall, on just a general line of credit. Some of those guys lost 90 cents on the dollar in the bankruptcy.
Huh.
Yeah, and I think, obviously they should have lost something, but, do the retirees take a 10% hit and the small business owner takes a 90% hit?
Yeah, I just want to circle back to the theme of the show for a sec. So talking about pensions in 2019, would you say that the pension risk post-bankruptcy is now low? I mean, are those issues out of the way now for Detroit?
Well, for the city of Detroit,
yeah.
And I can't say this with 100% certainty because I don't follow it as closely as the city that I live in.
You're not liable for any.
But yeah, no, their financial situation is better than what it was.
That was my initial appeal to Detroit okay, you have a post-bankrupt city. Mm-hmm. Things still seem relatively cheap. You talk about Detroit, people get kind of nervous and scared. Like, I'm never going to invest in Detroit. I wouldn't until things are better. you know, when you wait till things are rosy, then you've missed the opportunity.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And
so it seems like things are going in the right direction. That was sort of my general sense.
Yes, and I think you're
I'm
right.
I'm not saying it's perfect. You know, it's not going to be New York City, but my
right, and it
my,
never
my,
will. Be.
Yeah.
But you know, guess what? It doesn't have to be.
That's the point. Yeah.
You know, yeah, and one of the huge opportunities, I think, and if I were on the coast, I'd be very nervous about this.
All right, I just want to wrap it up in a few minutes, too.
Okay. Yeah, but there's going to be a huge, tremendous opportunity for inshoring.
For what?
What's called inshoring.
Yeah, what is that? I don't know what that means.
Well, what that is that's shifting of work from high cost areas, New York City, Washington D.C., and moving
to
Detroit. Yeah, when I was working as an attorney, that's actually where I got the idea from. They are inshoring, so they're taking, you know, with these huge lawsuits, they have a small presence in New York City to meet with the clients, and all the back office and grunt work is moved to Detroit. Because you have tons and tons and tons and tons of attorneys that are willing to work for $20, $25 an hour. And you can buy a building, you know, for $20 a square foot or rent it, you know, for one-tenth of the cost in New York City. Now, if you can do this with attorneys, you can do this with, you know, maybe accountants and maybe architects and maybe, you know, IT and, you know, so on and so forth. And it's obviously not just Detroit, you know, maybe Cleveland or Columbus or Chattanooga or, you know, these other cities in the heartland. You know, New York City is a great place, you know, and obviously it's probably always going to be the capital for banking and business and such. But why would you pay the high salaries in New York and the high rents when you can get a lot of that work done here in Detroit or Cleveland or others?
I have a new motto for Detroit. Detroit, America's China.
Oh, yeah, no, we have schools here. We have the interweb. We have mail. You know, we have freeways. We have electricity. Yeah, we've got it all. You know? And, you know, we've got factories and we've got a good strategic location. You know, one of the world's most valuable border crossings is here in Detroit, going between Detroit and Canada.
To Windsor, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the Ambassador Bridge and the Detroit Tunnel and the train tunnel that goes under the river. The amount of finished goods and the value of a product traveling through the Detroit border is just, it's incredible. It's just incredible.
I want to ask you one last question before we wrap this up. Okay. What are your thoughts on Detroit pizza?
Oh, Detroit pizza?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I hate to say it, but I'm personally a fan of Chicago deep dish.
Good man. That's a good. That was the right answer.
Yeah, the Detroit square pizza, you know, I mean, it's
okay.
Tasty, but you've got a problem that a lot of these places put too much dough, not enough cheese, not enough meat, at least in my opinion.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's supposed to be kind of like airy and doughy and... It was okay. I didn't dislike it. I just didn't get it. I always was like, because, you know, people who are from Detroit, and you got to try the Detroit pizza. That was another thing, though, is for as shitty as some of that parts of the city were, the pride of the locals was actually kind of, was probably my, I'll be honest, was, you know, I'm not a big bar hopper, so I'm not the expert on this. Probably other podcasters who do shows on whiskey could do a better analysis on this. But when I went to a few different bars, it was like you were family. They were like, "Oh, you're not from Detroit. Welcome to Detroit." And it's kind of awesome, actually, how friendly people were at the bars.
Oh, absolutely. If you make a friend in Detroit, you can make a friend for life. And, you know, a lot of Detroiters, we've been through so much. You know, they're proud to have made it as far as they have. So, and I think, you know, Detroit faces a lot of challenges, and, you know, it's going to have to work on a lot of things, but I absolutely think the future can be better than the past, and it can indeed, once again, you know, be a good example to the rest of the country. And, you know, we'll be doing better here.
Yeah, well, I wish the city well. I wish you well on your real estate endeavors. And, of course, for the listeners, you know, do your own due diligence. And it's not something you there's no stock screen for real estate, Detroit real estate. So.
Oh, very true. Yeah, so it's not, you know, contrary to what's said on TV, it's not everybody gets rich.
Also, and also, if you see a 15% cap rate, just don't go start buying stuff at 15% cap rate, because that's what we said on the show. Don't come back to me when your tenants left and there's rats in the
The place was on fire.
I'm not liable for any decisions that you make in Detroit.
Don't blame her. DJD 1997.
Exactly. Yeah. And on that note, I think we're gonna. Wrap up the show. It was a pleasure having you back on, and
thank you, Eric.
I'm sure we'll talk again
anytime.
Soon.
Maybe a year from now, I'll have some more crazy stories and stuff to tell you. So thank you very much.
If it's in Detroit, Eric. You probably will. Whether you can talk about them on the show, that's another story in itself.
That's true too.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a great rest of your night.
Thank you, Eric. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.